It's a notorious symbol of the United States' so-called war on terror. Guantanamo Bay is where prisoners were tortured and denied their rights. Most were released without charge. So why is it still open 20 years after the September 11 attacks? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. Guantanamo Bay opened in the shadow of the 9/11 attacks 20 years ago. It was meant to be a temporary detention centre for the biggest threats to US national security as part of the so-called war on terror. But the place soon became notorious for human rights abuses. At its peak, it held 780 detainees, most without charge. Some were tortured using techniques such as waterboarding. They had no protection under US or international law and no access to a fair trial. 39 prisoners are still there, including the alleged mastermind of the September 11 attacks. President Joe Biden has promised to close it by 2024, but his administration faces many legal and political challenges.
I don't have a timeline for you. As you know, there's a process. There are different layers of the process, but that remains our goal, and we are considering all available avenues to responsibly transfer detainees and, of course, close Guantanamo Bay.
The prison was established at the U.S. base in Guantanamo Bay, southeast of Cuba, in January 2002. Former President Barack Obama failed to shut it down after Congress imposed limits on the transfer of its detainees. And Donald Trump pledged to keep the prison open and loaded up with those he called bad dudes. President Joe Biden is being challenged by some Republicans who see the release of detainees as a threat to U.S. security. His administration is trying to secure guarantees that the detainees will get humane treatment in their home country or that third countries will resettle them. Four of five Taliban members released in 2014 in exchange for an American soldier are now members of the new Taliban government in Afghanistan. Let's bring in our guests in Belgrade, Mansour Adafi, a former Guantanamo detainee and Guantanamo coordinator for CAGE, a human rights advocacy organization. In Istanbul, Jasmin El-Gamal, senior manager for MENA at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue and a former Pentagon Middle East advisor. And in New York, Kenneth Ross, executive director of Human Rights Watch. Welcome to the program. Let's begin in New York with you, Kenneth Ross. And possibly the most obvious question, why is Guantanamo Bay still open?
Well, there are various reasons. Part of it is that a number of the people there are a minority, have been charged criminally, but have not been brought before a regular court. They're being tried before these makeshift military commissions that the U.S. government established basically to cover up its torture. They thought that they could control the trial proceedings better with these military commissions and prevent evidence of the torture from coming out. But these, you know, commissions don't pretend to provide real justice. They've been subject to all kinds of challenges and problems. And as a result, they're going nowhere. I remember going to Guantanamo in 2012, so 9 years ago, for the opening charges, the arraignment against the five leading mastermind suspects for 9/11. And there still has not been a trial. So one of the problems is, you know, how do you move toward a fair system of justice for the handful of people who are being charged? As for the rest, the U.S. government has actually imposed legislation prohibiting the spending of money to send people back to the United States. So the government needs to find other places to take them, which it's done for, you know, most of what at one point was 780 people at Guantanamo. There are 39 left, still a majority have never been charged. And some of them, the U.S. government is moving toward trying to put someplace else. But there's a relative handful that it believes still are dangerous, but they can't charge them. They don't really have any crime that they can say that they committed. And, you know, that's the problem. And frankly, I think it's a made-up problem because if you look around the world, there are many, many people who wish the United States harm, who, you know, if they had the opportunity, might resort to terrorism. A tiny handful is in Guantanamo. But the reason, you know, and now the Biden administration, but frankly, this is true for the earlier ones as well, doesn't want to release them is they don't want the political responsibility for what happened, you know, to this handful of people. You mentioned in the opening that, you know, some of the Guantanamo detainees, former detainees, are now in the Taliban government. And that's the kind of political problem the U.S. government doesn't like. Now, obviously, the Taliban has many, many abusive people that it can fill its government with. You know, these five have been chosen really, I think, just to kind of, you know, poke the United States. But, you know, that said, the Biden administration is afraid of, you know, what in the U.S. is called the Willie Horton problem. That is, you know, if you release somebody who commits a crime, then you're politically responsible for it. And so I think it's really politics more than anything else that at this stage is standing in the way of actually closing Guantanamo.
Well, let's bring one of those so-called problems into the conversation. Mansour Adefi, are you a problem for the U.S. government? You're a former detainee.
I think I have, you know, sorry. I have asked that question for the last 15 years I spent at Guantanamo, tried to find out what was the problem being there. First of all, I was accused to be Al-Qaeda general and 9/11 insider. So historically, I was the second general in history after Alexander. After 15 years, or almost like 15 years, I was told it was a mistaken identity, and it is unclear if I joined Al-Qaeda or not. I said, guys, either say Al-Qaeda or not Al-Qaeda. They told me, we cannot just say we detain an innocent man for 15 years. I would love to say something about Guantanamo. Guantanamo is a big mess. After, like, we now be witnessing the 20th anniversary of 9/11, which I'm actually trying to find out what led to 9/11. Since at Guantanamo, I ask everyone, what's the reason that led to Guantanamo to 9/11 to happen? Guantanamo, the island outside of the law, there is no legal basis for that place. So it will be hard for the United States to prosecute those brothers there. At the same time, we were brought, there's the worst of the worst terrorists on the planet. That what they perpetuated the myth to the world. So over and over again, last month or 2 months ago, the same myth, when six Republicans sent a letter to Biden, asking him not to close Guantanamo because the remaining detainees are the worst of the worst. That happened again during the Obama administration, when Congress legislated that Guantanamo is not going to open because it held the worst of the worst terrorists. And as you know, according to the ACLU, that 86% of the detainees at Guantanamo were either a mistaken identity or sold for bounty money.
Now, let's bring in Jasmine El-Gamal here in Istanbul. Jasmine, this is a political problem. And it very much seems to me that the Republicans, the language that they're using and often blocking any attempts to close down Guantanamo Bay is very simple. These are bad guys, and if we release them, they're going to come and get us. Now, is there any truck with that argument? Is there any honesty in that argument?
You know, the short answer is no, and I'm not a political person at all, so this is not a political answer to your question. The sad fact is that from the very beginning, Guantanamo Bay was an extremely political topic, and the creation of Guantanamo Bay was based on fear-based policies that the Bush administration took in response to 9/11. We were afraid. We made a lot of bad choices and a lot of wrong choices, and Guantanamo Bay was one of them. And your other guest on the show that was there, unfortunately, as a detainee, made a very good point when he said that over 80% of the detainees were released at some point, that we were asking offering money to anyone who would offer U.S. forces an Arab who was living in Afghanistan, because we thought that all Arabs living in Afghanistan must be Al-Qaeda and must be out to get us. So there were all of these problems, like structural problems at the beginning. Once we got these detainees to Guantanamo Bay, I arrived in the summer of 2004, and I started working on something called the Administrative Review Boards that basically looked at every detainee story and then was able to determine whether they were in fact there wrongly or rightly. And most of them were
Sorry, Jasmine, we seem to have lost you there. I'm going to come back to you in a moment, but I want to bring in Kenneth Roth here in New York. You're hearing what Jasmine was saying there. This is very much a political, it's a structural problem. But there's a bigger problem when it comes to actually trying to shut it down, because there is no real legal framework that the United States can rely on to put them on trial, because these are third-party nationals. Is that right?
No, that's not quite right. In other words, if somebody, you know, commits terrorism against the United States, that it's easy to prosecute. And indeed, you know, had the alleged masterminds of 9/11 been brought to a regular federal court, you know, in downtown Manhattan, their trial would have been completed years ago. In fact, you know, there have been hundreds of terrorism trials completed, including, you know, frankly, of the so-called 20th hijacker, Moussaoui, who was, you know, convicted in federal court. So, you know, there would have been no problem with trying people, but the U.S. government didn't want to go before the regular federal courts, you know, partly for ideological reasons. It said these people are not criminals, they're enemy combatants. Now, I don't know why being called an enemy combatant is worse than being called a, you know, a terrorist criminal. Indeed, it almost could be seen as a badge of honor. But there was, you know, that was one line of thinking. And then the other line of thinking, as I mentioned, is, you know, we know that many of these suspects were tortured. You know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged, you know, key mastermind of 9/11, was said to have been waterboarded at least 183 times. The U.S. government doesn't want the evidence of that coming out. Indeed, it wants to, you know, somehow find ways to be able to use the fruits of the interrogations. They brought in so-called, you know, clean interrogation teams. So, you know, after he's been tortured and tortured and tortured, then they bring in somebody new and say, okay, now give us your the same statement voluntarily, you know. And now that, you know, may survive the makeshift military commissions. It's very unlikely that they would survive scrutiny in a regular federal court. So these are the problems. You know, it's ideology, it's the torture that stand in the way of criminal prosecutions. But ordinarily, federal courts are there and can be used for criminal prosecutions of terrorism. Now, the other thing is worth mentioning is that leaving aside the issue of prosecution, you know, as Jasmine said, you know, most of the people in Guantanamo, you know, a lot of them were just there because they were picked up because of bounties. They were never really found to have done anything. But the theory that the U.S. government used to detain people without charging them, and that represents the vast, vast majority of the 780 or so people who have been through Guantanamo, the theory they used is that these are enemy combatants in a global war on terror. That was the Bush administration's term. And, you know, under international law, if you are at war, you know, classic state-to-state war with a battlefield, if you capture a combatant on the other side, you can detain the combatant without charges until the end of the war. The Bush administration then stretched that theory to make it a global concept. You know, even though there was a battlefield in Afghanistan, but there was no global battlefield. But they said, look, if this is a global war, anybody picked up who was said to have been involved in terrorism without even charges can be held as an enemy combatant until the end of that global war on terror, which may be an endless war, may never come. And that theory has never been formally repudiated. You know, the Obama administration stopped using it. Biden doesn't like it, but they've never declared an end to this so-called global war on terror to say, you know, from now on, we're going to use classic law enforcement techniques. We're going to arrest people. We're going to prosecute them. We're not going to just detain them forever as enemy combatants, or worse, you know, we're not going to use drones to summarily kill them in places like Yemen when they don't pose an imminent threat and when there's been no attempt to try to detain them.
Well, let's bring in Jasmine issue here, because I want her to answer a couple of your points there. Mansoor, we will come to you very shortly. Jasmine, you were an advisor to the Pentagon at the Department of Defense. You were part of those discussions about whether it should be closed or not, but there seems to be pushback on closing Guantanamo Bay down. It was seen as a necessity, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I actually worked under the Obama administration. I was not a political appointee. I was a civil servant, but my tenure spanned both terms of the Obama administration. And so I can tell you firsthand that President Obama definitely tried to close down Guantanamo Bay. He appointed two people, one at the State Department and one at the Defense Department, who were in charge of reviewing cases and bringing them to the highest levels of the National Security Council to review those cases and recommend a release or otherwise. So I definitely will push back on Ken's Kenneth's point that that the U.S. does not want to close down Guantanamo Bay. So first of all, President Obama was making a concerted effort to do so, appointing two envoys at the State and Defense Departments to do so. But another something that has not been mentioned that has been part of the difficulty in closing down Guantanamo Bay is that when we decided to release somebody at Guantanamo Bay, we had to release them either to their home country or to a third country if their home country wouldn't take them. And in many in all cases, we had to receive assurances from that country that we were sending them to that they would not be tortured or detained or unfairly treated once they got back. And in many cases, we actually were not able to receive those assurances from the home countries. We would start looking for third countries, but it was really difficult to find any country that wanted to take them because they were so tainted, unfortunately, by the Guantanamo brand. Take the case of the Uyghurs, for example. All of the Uyghurs that were in Guantanamo Bay were there completely erroneously. We thought they were fighting the U.S., but it turns out they were in training camps in Afghanistan, learning how to fight so that they could go back and protect themselves against the Chinese communist government.
Let's bring in somebody
so
who
we couldn't find anywhere.
Well, let's bring in somebody who is actually in a third country.
We couldn't find any country. Right, right.
I mean, Mansour, here you
Please,
are.
Please, go ahead.
Mansour, there you are in Belgrade. You're in a third country. Were you sold to Belgrade effectively? Is that what happened to you?
Yeah, this is the deal, actually. Basically, this is a deal. Those countries receive also fund, as, you know, let us say a deal from the United States. It's not like a deal or during a Obama administration, as she mentioned that he was wanted to close the detention, but when he found out that he couldn't do it because the legislation that the Congress imposed, so he tried to free as many people as he could, because those many of us were cleared either in 2009 or in 2014 and 15. So each detainee resettlement, it was an agreement resettlement. With the agreement resettlement, the United States asked those countries some kind of like rehabilitation, reintegration program. With the package, there is also a budget for this program. But that money ended up in the black hole in the third country. Let us talk about recidivism, as that they said, like they might afraid something will do harm. Like if you look in Europe here, for example, I mean, there is... We consider a small rate of recidivism because for the last year, I have been conducting research of rehabilitation and reintegration of former Guantanamo detainees as part of my bachelor's degree thesis. So I have tackled many problems. The problem is in the resettlement country, there is a lack of rehabilitation and reintegration program. Harassment, new legal status, new kind of... program that can help the detainee, the released detainees to fit into society and become a productive member. If you see an example in Germany, in Oman, in Qatar, the released detainees fit into society, they move with their life, they get married, jobs, and so on. So basically, in my case particularly, I was forced to come to Serbia. They told me, you have no choice, either stay right in Guantanamo or leave. I was forced to leave. I was sitting in that chair and shipped to Serbia, in my case.
Now, Kenneth, what's the human rights position here under international law? Mansour was forced to go to Serbia. He wasn't given a choice. Is that a violation of human rights?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as Jasmine noted, the Obama administration did make sincere efforts to resettle people. They appointed a special envoy at the State Department. And, you know, they rightfully insisted on finding countries that would not torture people. But they also were looking for countries that would, you know, maintain some degree of security surveillance. You know, the original unfairness, frankly, is being detained in Guantanamo with no due process at all. But if I could, let me just put a bit of a qualification on Jasmine's point that Obama wanted to close Guantanamo. I mean, in principle, yes. In reality, he wouldn't take two steps that to this day are the main impediment for the Biden administration. That is, you know, first, he made an initial effort to move the trial from the substandard military commissions to federal court in New York. There was political opposition and he caved in. And so now there's actually legislation against doing that, which Obama allowed to go through. Second, I mean, I remember speaking with Obama directly on this. I said, you know, would you abide by the principle of either prosecuting people before a legitimate federal court or releasing them? And he said, no, there's a third category people who we don't have the evidence to prosecute, you know, either because of torture or whatever, and who remain too dangerous to release. And that is the Biden administration's position to this day as well. And, you know, undoubtedly, there are a handful of people in Guantanamo who have not passed the security review, who are deemed to still pose a threat. But I think you have to look at that in the perspective of the world. You know, do they pose a greater threat than the gazillion of other people out there who, you know, might want to do the United States harm? And is that threat of these handful of individuals, does that really outweigh the threat caused by the existence of Guantanamo, which continues to this day to be a rallying cry for terrorist recruiters who love to cite Guantanamo as evidence of the injustice of the U.S. effort to fight in the way that it does terrorism? So I think that there is, you know, the problems that beset the Obama administration are still problems facing the Biden administration. And I hope that they can find a way to move beyond them to either, you know, basically to bring the 9/11
suspects. Kenneth, let's get into the future. Jasmine, I mean, Kenneth is right. The problems that Obama had in shutting it down still remain to this day with this new administration. Are they going to be any more successful?
You know, listen, it's hard to say, but I wanted to just make a quick point that is related to your question, but just to Kenneth's point about, you know, bringing these detainees to the U.S. to be tried. I think that we have to remember and we have to also pay respect and honor the victims of these terrorist attacks that really, really felt incredible pain and anguish at the thought of these detainees. I'm talking about the very high level ones, the ones that we know were responsible. I'm not talking about the ones that were, you know, wrongly detained. At the sight of them coming to New York, to the US, to the very soil that they attacked, you know, and changed the country forever. And how much of a huge narrative boost and how much of a huge PR coup that would have been to these terrorists to come to New York City and to basically stand in front of these victims.
Jasmine, are you saying that this would have been a PR victory for Al Qaeda to be tried, or would it have been closure for the family of 9/11 victims? They would a court case with a conviction. No, a court case with a conviction. A court case with a conviction would have been a closure.
I understand. So you and I may think that, right? But that's obviously not what the families thought. And it's not what, if you look at, and this is like a slightly tangential topic, but if you, first of all, I think we should respect what the families wanted, not what you and I think, even though I might agree with you. The families did not want these people coming to U.S. soil and talking about their ideology and their victory against the United States in a U.S. courtroom, and I think we should respect that. And I think at the end of the day, President Obama respected that feeling and that plea. But also, if you look at the way that these terrorist organizations recruit, and this actually brings us to today, because I know that part of this program you wanted to talk about the implications for what's happening today. If you look at the way that Al-Qaeda and ISIS waged the war against the West and against their enemies, the PR aspect was a huge aspect of it. Every single thing mattered. Everything was a part of that PR battle. Coming to New York would have been a huge victory for them because they would have said, look, I have a platform to speak about what the things that I've done to this country. They're giving me a platform after I attack them.
Jasmine, we are running out of time. Kenneth, I understand that you do want to say, but we have actually run out of time. Due process is something that we need to get into in another program, sadly. But I do want to thank all our guests, Mansoor Adefi, Jasmine El-Gamal, and Kenneth Roth. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here, bye for now.